Welcome to the Countdown to Canada podcast by Arrive, a podcast for newcomers by newcomers. We give you the information, resources, and tips you need to build a successful life here. Whether you're exploring your immigration options, looking for your first job, starting your studies as an international student, or adapting to life in Canada, this podcast will set you up for a smooth journey. Now let's get you home. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Clem Nouveau-Vallier. And as a former newcomer to Canada, I know how important financial stability is as you settle in a new country. Most newcomers bring some savings, at least enough to show proof of settlement funds when they first arrive in Canada. Now, depending on your situation, you may or may not need these funds during your initial months. For instance, if you find a job in Canada quickly, you might not need to dip into your savings that you bring from home. Regardless of whether you have a few thousand dollars to spare or a much larger amount, it's important to learn about savings and investment products in Canada so that you can earn returns on your money and save for your future life goals. And we highly recommend that you go through our free financial guide even before you move to Canada so that you can begin familiarizing yourself with how banking and saving works in your new country. And you can find a link to this guide in the episode description. Today, I'm with Anam Youssef, a newcomer banking advisor at the Royal Bank of Canada, and we're going to talk about how newcomers can save and invest funds in Canada. I do want to point out that if you're getting ready to plan your saving and investment strategy in Canada, you can book a free appointment with an RBC newcomer advisor like Anam for guidance and support based on your individual situation and goals. And you'll find a link to book an appointment in the episode description below. And with that, let's begin. Hi, Anam. How are you today?
Hi, Clem. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on this podcast.
I'm glad to have you here. Anam, you speak to newcomers on a daily basis, so you know that properly managing their finances is a top priority for most newcomers who come to Canada. And usually, when it comes to understanding financial products in Canada, most newcomers have some kind of learning curve because the financial products available here are different from the ones they're familiar with back home, or because they aren't sure about which ones are the best suited for them. So I'm really sure that our listeners today are going to be interested to hear you explain what the saving and investment options are here in Canada. But before we get into that, let's first talk about financial goals and what kind of goals newcomers should have.
Sure. I want to preface this by saying that not all newcomers will have the same financial goals during their initial years in Canada, and that's normal. If you haven't started settling financial goals yet, I encourage you to think about things you hope to have or achieve in short, mid, and long term. Some newcomers have only one financial goal in the beginning, and that is to make their savings last until they find a suitable job in their field. Others might think ahead and plan to save a portion of their Canadian income for future, whether it's for an emergency fund, to travel back to their home country, to buy a car, pay for their children's post-secondary education, or even for retirement. Many newcomers also support family back home and will plan to save a certain amount each month for that purpose. Some newcomers may have had a higher income before coming to Canada or might have sold their property back home. And it's not uncommon to see these newcomers wanting to buy a home here as soon as possible. All these are examples of financial goals, and your goals will depend on your situation and financial priorities. Just make sure you set realistic timelines for your goals and start setting money aside accordingly. For instance, if you want to buy a home within 5 years, calculate what your budget will be and how much you need to save for the down payment.
Understood. And is there a certain minimum amount that all newcomers should be saving?
That will really depend on the amount you have coming in each month and your expenses. If you have found a job in Canada already, then yes, you should try to save at least 15 to 20% of each paycheck. Of course, that might not be possible right off the bat. For instance, if you are the only earning member in your family, or if you are in a survival job and only earning enough to cover your expenses. On average, Canadians spend roughly 30 to 50% of their monthly budget on accommodation, whether that's rent or mortgage payments. Once you start to get settled in Canada, try to keep the 50-30-20 rule in mind. That is, 50% of your income should cover your needs or fixed expenses, 30% can go towards your wants, and ideally you should be putting at least 20% of your earnings into savings.
That's a great tip, Anam. I'm going to repeat that for everyone, 50% for your needs, 30% for your wants, and 20% for your savings, and that's kind of what you should aim for.
Anna, before we get into how newcomers can start savings, I want to take a minute to talk about the difference in between saving and investment. I think most of our listeners will be familiar with the concept of saving, that is, setting money aside for the future, possibly in an account that earns interest. Investing differs a little from that. Essentially, you use this money you've set aside to purchase assets that might increase in value over time or earn returns.
That's right. Another difference between savings and investments is that investments typically involve some degree of risk. Investments don't guarantee a return, and over time, the value of your asset you invest in can change, resulting in a profit or a loss. So it is very important that you research your options and decide on a savings and investment strategy that works best for you based on your risk tolerance and your financial goals. And one of the ways you can get this information is by speaking to an RBC newcomer advisor. Our advisors will help you create a financial plan that's customized to your specific needs.
Yes, and you'll find a link to book an appointment with an RBC advisor in the episode description, as mentioned before. Now, let's talk about the common savings and investment products that newcomers can leverage in Canada.
Sure. I'll start by talking about two saving products. The first is the regular savings account that you can open with any bank or financial institution in Canada. These accounts typically earn an interest, but it's quite low.
Yeah, especially if you're comparing them to interest rates in some South American, African, or Asian countries where they're typically higher.
Exactly. Saving accounts generally don't have a monthly fee, but there are usually restrictions on the number of debit transactions that you can make from this account. So you wouldn't use it for your day-to-day spending. That is, that account is called a checking account in Canada. Then there is something called a high interest savings account, or HISA. It's not too different from a regular savings account, but usually money in this account earns a higher rate of interest. Sometimes some banks might offer promotional interest rates for a few months when you open a new savings account with them, so keep an eye out for such offers. Saving accounts and HISAs are ideal when you want to save for a short-term goal. For instance, if you're setting up an emergency fund and want to contribute $200 or $500 to each every month. Putting this money in savings rather than investments will ensure that A, your money is liquid and you can access it right away when needed, and B, your funds are not at any risk and you're earning some interest on them instead.
Okay, that's perfect. And what about investment products?
So investments are usually longer term and not quite as liquid. There are quite a few investment options available in Canada. Let's start with guaranteed investment certificates, which are popularly known as GICs. A GIC is a low to no risk investment product sold by banks. When you purchase a GIC, your principal or investment is guaranteed by the financial institution, and your investment earns a fixed or a variable interest rate. GICs can be a fixed term, also called non-redeemable GICs, or they can be cashable. Usually, non-redeemable GICs offer a higher rate of return because your money is locked in for a fixed period ranging from 1 month to 10 years. So there are three common types of GICs. A guaranteed interest GIC, as the name suggests, offers you a guaranteed rate of return. If you buy an interest-linked GIC, the interest rate you earn is linked to the bank's prime rate. So if the prime rate increases, you stand to earn more. If the prime rate decreases, you can cash out your investment and reinvest into another financial product. And the third type is a market-linked GIC, which is tied to the stock market or equity benchmarks. It guarantees your initial investment and may sometimes provide a small interest rate. Additionally, it offers the possibility of earning a return that can beat inflation if, of course, the stock market does well.
Thanks, Anam. GICs usually gain popularity during times of financial uncertainty because, like Anam just mentioned, they're risk-free. If you're not sure which type of investment or GIC is best for you, your banking advisor can guide you. Now, besides GICs, what other investment products can newcomers invest in, Anna?
Bonds are another popular investment option. A bond is a debt instrument issued by the government or a company to raise funds. When you buy a bond, you're essentially loaning money to the issuer for a fixed period at a specific rate of interest. Bonds are relatively low-risk investments that can bring in regular income for you, but keep in mind that your money will be locked in for anywhere between 1 to 30 years. Mm-hmm. Then there are stocks or equity. A stock, also called a share, is fractional ownership of a corporation. Usually, this will be a company that's publicly listed on stock exchange. In addition to dividends that some companies pay to shareholders, you can also earn capital gains if you sell your stock for more than the purchase price. However, stocks are relatively risky investments because stock prices are prone to volatility in the market due to various reasons, such as expected company performance, market sentiment, etc. On the flip side, if you plan to invest in stocks for a mid to long-term period, then you can potentially earn a much higher rate of return than you would with savings or less risky investment products.
Got it. I know that many newcomers who aren't familiar with the different Canadian stocks or bonds instead opt for mutual funds or ETFs. Would you like to talk about those too?
Sure. A mutual fund is a professionally managed investment product that pools funds from many investors to invest in a portfolio of stocks, bonds, and other financial assets. When you purchase a mutual fund, you're buying a small percentage of portfolio's value. You might have to pay a commission or fee when you buy or sell mutual funds, and the unit cost will usually also include a portion of funds' operating expenses. A mutual fund might have a theme or be focused on investing in certain types of companies. An exchange-traded fund or ETF is similar in that it is a professionally managed pool of financial assets like stocks, bonds, etc. But unlike mutual funds, ETFs are listed and traded on stock exchange.
That's great. So because mutual funds and ETFs are actively managed by a team of professionals or market-linked, you don't have to devote as much time or do as much research as you would with individual stocks or bonds. And the returns you earn are similar to stocks, but usually there's relatively less risk because your portfolio is more diversified.
That's correct.
Any other investment products besides these that might be of interest to newcomers?
Well, there are other options. Some people choose to buy gold as a long-term investment. Others who are more open to risk might be drawn to investments like cryptocurrency.
Yeah, we've been hearing a lot about crypto over the last few years, so let's talk about that for a little bit.
Cryptocurrency is a type of a digital or a virtual currency. Many types of crypto can be traded on crypto exchanges, so their value is to some extent driven by the demand and supply. Unlike regular currency, crypto is decentralized and isn't issued or managed by any particular governing authority. That said, some governments are now taking an active role in regulating cryptocurrency, and some countries have even banned crypto trading.
So it's risky.
Very. But that also means that some investors can make huge gains if they buy at the right time.
Got it. Thank you for sharing that. Anam, as you know, any conversation about savings and investing in Canada would be vastly incomplete without talking about registered accounts. So before we get into that, can you tell our listeners the difference between registered and non-registered accounts?
Absolutely. And you're right. Registered accounts are usually at the core of investing and saving strategy for most Canadians, including newcomers. Now, a registered account or plan is registered with the Canadian government and offers some tax advantages on investments held within it. And typically, there are some restrictions on how much you can contribute to these accounts, either annually or over a lifetime. On the other hand, a non-registered account doesn't offer any financial incentives, but also doesn't have any restrictions.
Very interesting. I want to clarify how registered accounts are different from investment products. Anam talked about the different types of investment products like GICs, stocks, mutual funds, all of that. A registered account is essentially an account in which you can buy and hold such investments, although you can also choose to keep your funds as cash.
That's right.
And there are several different types of registered accounts. But let's talk about the ones that are most relevant to newcomers. Anam, do you want to start off with the tax-free savings account?
Okay. The tax-free savings account, or TFSA, is one of the most popular registered accounts among newcomers. And although the name says savings account, don't let that confuse you. So you can use this account to buy and hold different types of investment products too. And any returns you earn on your investment, whether it's in form of interest, capital gains, or dividends, they're all tax-free. Each year, the government decides what's next year's TFSA contribution limit will be, and that limit applies to everyone. For instance, the contribution limit for 2024 will be $7,000. But the great thing about TFSAs is that your contribution limit is cumulative. So if you don't max out your contribution limit in a particular year, the leftover portion rolls over to the next year or so on.
And as a newcomer, your TFSA contribution limit starts adding up the year you arrive in Canada, even if you don't open a TFSA account that year. All residents of Canada, including permanent residents and even temporary foreign workers and international students who meet the residency requirements, are eligible to open a TFSA. I also want to point out that you can withdraw funds from your TFSA at any time for any reason, unless, of course, you've invested that money in non-redeemable or fixed-term products.
Thanks for bringing that up, Clem, because that's not the case for most registered accounts. So next, I want to talk about the Registered Retirement Savings Plan, or RRSP. This is a registered plan that can help you save for retirement or for other major life expenses, such as buying your first home or funding your education. The biggest advantage of contributing to an RRSP is that your contributions are tax-deferred. This means that you can subtract your contribution amount from your taxable income the following year. However, when you make withdrawals from your RRSP, you need to pay tax on both your contributions as well as any returns you have earned on that money. But if you're using your RRSP for retirement savings, then you'll likely have a limited or at least lower income when you start withdrawing funds and will therefore be in a lower tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, your RRSP contribution limit is 18% of your taxable income in the previous year, up to a certain dollar amount.
Yes. I want to flag that as a newcomer, you can only open an RRSP account after you've filed your first tax return in Canada, which will usually be the year after you arrive. And once you do, you can find what your contribution room is in your CRA account, Canada Revenue Agency.
Yes. Please don't try to contribute to an RRSP during your first year in Canada. If you do, you might have to pay a penalty for over-contribution. Wait until you file your taxes for the first time to open an RRSP account.
Yes.
Besides the TFSA and RRSP, there are other registered accounts that can help you set money aside for specific purposes. One registered account that's fairly new is the First Home Savings Account, or FHSA. Many newcomers dream of buying a home in Canada a few years after they arrive. If that's something you plan on doing, the FHSA is an excellent way to save money for a down payment on a home in Canada. The annual contribution limit for FHSA is $8,000, and there is a lifetime contribution limit of $40,000. But the advantage is that all your contributions are tax deductible, and secondly, any withdrawals you make from that account are also tax-free, provided you're using that money to purchase or build your first home in Canada.
Those sound like some really great tax advantages. To add to what Anam just said, if you have a spouse, you can both contribute to your individual FHSAs and then pool the money together when it's time to buy a home. And that way, you can collectively save $16,000 per year for your future home purchase within this account. And lots of newcomers move to Canada with children, and of course, saving for their kids' post-secondary education is a priority for them. Can you tell our listeners about the Registered Education Savings Plan and its benefits?
Absolutely. A Registered Education Savings Plan, or RESP, is a tax-deferred savings plan that allows you to save for your child's post-secondary education. For this account, the subscriber is usually a parent, but it can also be a grandparent or a relative or a family friend, and the beneficiary is usually a child. RESP contributions are not tax deductible, but earnings on your investment are tax deferred, and the beneficiary will have to pay taxes on the amount they withdraw from their education. There's no annual contribution limit, but there's a lifetime contribution limit of $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to keep in mind that this lifetime limit is per beneficiary, not per subscriber. So if you or someone else has opened multiple RESP accounts for your children, the total contributions can be made to all those accounts cannot exceed $50,000.
Per child.
Per child. The benefit of contributing to an RESP account is that government matches a portion of your contributions in form of grants. And if you have several children, you can open an RESP for each child under a family plan. And if one of your kids doesn't end up spending that money, then you may actually transfer it to another child. If you're considering opening an RESP, I recommend that you book an appointment with an RBC advisor to understand the advantages of this account and select the right RESP for your situation.
Thanks, Anam. Now, all these accounts that you spoke of can hold a variety of investments. So how do you choose which registered plan or investment products are right for you?
Generally, the first thing to consider before purchasing any investment product will be the level of risk it involves. We weigh your personal risk appetite. Mm-hmm. And risk is often correlated with the return you can expect. So usually, higher the risk, the higher the return. Your risk appetite and expected rate of return will also likely depend on when you need the funds and what you wish to use them for.
Yes. For instance, you might be more willing to accept a higher degree of risk for funds that you're setting aside for the long term, like for retirement, if it can potentially earn more profit. But if the money you're putting away for is for an emergency fund or a vacation next year, then you probably don't want to risk your investment, even if that means earning a lower rate of return.
That's a great point, Clem. The investment plans and products you choose should always align with your financial goals. Besides that, some newcomers opt for investments that reflect their personal values, such as ETFs, with a socially responsible portfolio. If you're choosing to invest in a mutual fund or ETF, it's also important to compare the costs and fee associated with those investments to make sure you're getting enough value out of it. And finally, having a diversified portfolio is a great way to hedge against risk. So whether or not you're managing your own investments, try not to put all your eggs in one basket.
Yes, that actually brings me to my next question, Anam. How exactly can newcomers manage their investments? Where do they start?
That's a great question. And the answer depends on how comfortable you are with managing your investments. The first option is to self-manage your investments. You can open a registered or non-registered account with a financial institution and decide which products to invest in. For instance, RBC has a direct investing platform that gives you complete control over your investments. But before you opt for this route, think about how much you know about the different investment products in Canada. Or if you want to invest in individual stocks, how confident are you that you will pick the right ones? It's also important to consider how much time you can dedicate to managing your money. The next option is to get advice from a financial advisor or planner. In such cases, you might be able to decide what degree of support you want. For instance, you can find financial professionals who merely recommend the products you should purchase, but there are also those who can choose, buy, and manage your investments for you. You can also use services like RBC My Advisor to get digital advice and create a customized financial plan, but otherwise retain control over your investments. We do have a third option, that is to hire a wealth management advisor who will understand your investing requirements, draw up a personalized plan, and build your portfolio accordingly. This is usually best suited for people with more sophisticated or longer-term wealth management needs, such as growing your money for retirement.
Understood. This is really, really helpful, Anam. Thank you so much for joining me today and taking us through all the saving and investment options available in Canada. I know a lot of newcomers come to Canada with their existing savings and they're looking for ways to grow their wealth. And others want to start saving a part of their income once they find jobs in Canada so that they can fulfill all their goals and dreams as they start to call Canada their home. Thank you for listening to the Countdown to Canada podcast by Arrive. We hope the information we've shared today will help you pick the right savings and investment options based on your goals. And for other newcomer resources to help with your career, life, and finances in Canada, check out our website, arrivein.com, and subscribe to our podcast. We hope to see you back for the next episode.